Hello. Thanks for taking time to listen to this. My name is Stephen Cocconi, and I'm the author of the Michael Motivation Cards. Also, I'm a presenter of the Michael Teachings and Michael's Consortium. I wanted to take a moment to introduce you to the idea of my upcoming book, On Motivation, A Vocabulary for Telling the Stories of Our Lives, symbolized using the Michael Motivation Cards. So let me tell you a story. It's been my experience, ladies and gentlemen, that over the course of human history, we have been storytellers. Every time we speak or write, through our interactions with one another, our sharing intimacies, our gossips, our poems, our books, our written communications of every sort, or sometimes even gesture with our eyes, we're telling a story about what's going on with us. But the best stories are those that have the most complete and profound vocabulary. The idea of the story of our life is really the key. There's plenty of scientific, neurological, historical, and if you really think about it, personal experience that we live and exist by trading narratives. And narratives is a really broad term for anything that has to do with our languaging of verbal communications to one another. And we do that because with this extra large brain of ours and our unique physiology as an animal, we have the opportunity to actually create abstractions called words that refer to things, but not just tangible things, but also to things that we make up in our minds. It is utterly fantastic, incredible when you think about it. Out of all 2 billion years of life on this planet, that our species alone have come up with a vocabulary, a defined, repeatable, generalized set of sounds. Not just one, not just English, but many of them. Hindi, Chinese, all the Latin-based languages, French, Italian, Spanish, all the African-based languages, all the Arabic-based languages. Absolutely remarkable. Whatever structures exist, to me, are part of this amazing thing that I call the Tao. Storylines, then, the narratives that we tell each other about ourselves, about life, about various kinds of things we experience, that really help to organize our minds in ways that allow us to make some sense and function and train our behaviors, aim the directions of possible goals we might have, and otherwise give us a sense of something called meaning. Meaning. Like all of us who call ourselves baby boomers. My own storyline in this comes from the fact that as a kid born in the United States, at arguably one of the most interesting periods in all of human history, the current era, I am a product of so many layers of psychological input. Instead of just brushing it aside, I'm one of those type of people who stand in awe of the absolute amazing diversity, sheer depth, and otherwise great opportunity that there is here to experience all this. But I'm also aware of something else. A tendency of human animals. For me, in needing to describe this, I've done the same thing that has been going on through all of written history and is pretty well speculated that occurred through even prehistory. And that is, we made up stories about what all this is about. And by this, of course, I'm talking about existence itself. All of my life, I have been walking through this journey. I tried to bring sense to it, organize it, create a mental container where everything seemed to make sense. And one of the things that didn't make sense was simplistic right and wrong. Oh, I don't mean moral understandings of pleasure and pain, of love or fear. I'm talking about somebody's story about what's right, somebody else's story about what's wrong. Because ultimately, what I found is human beings we're duplicitous everywhere. We almost use all those narratives, all those aphorisms, all those commandments, all those doctrines as a way of shaming somebody else while finding loopholes in there to give ourselves permission to how we're going to act. Finding all that, my literal academic education, be all directed toward the study of what motivates us to do that, I stumbled upon something that which has, for me, been an incredibly important frame of reference. And that's the Michael teachings. I don't hold the Michael teachings as truth. I hold them as the most all-encompassing, durable, robust, and capable theoretical approach to understanding not only our physical nature, but our metaphysical nature as well. Hold it up as a frame of reference, as a way of sorting upon your experiences, bringing ideas to bear that may be much more all-encompassing, abstract, but inclusive than you've ever looked at before. You don't even need to believe any of it. If indeed, within this teaching alone, the thing that doesn't need to be put in there is this notion of right and wrong, good or evil, truth or falsity, but rather a question to answer what is, but more specifically, what might be. So the Michael teaching has formed my frame of reference about the way that I look at the world and understanding the vast multiple of storylines that exist in the world. And so the metaphysical is what's going on beyond or behind or invisible to our reality here. Every religion that ever exists, Ed, is a metaphysical teaching, just like the Michael teaching and every channeled source is. Why? Because it describes processes that our minds have had to come up with to name these invisible trends and patterns that I believe have validity, that we can see the tangible or factual results of, and some that describe far better than others, but they are still metaphysical altogether. So it just means my story about the Michael teaching is not, it is the end-all be-all. Then, in fairness, because I try to bring a state of intellectual honesty to this thing and say, that means every religion's story. I'm even calling out modern science, the part of it that issues canons about what is and what is impossible. That's scientism. That's becoming as dogmatic as anything that has to do with religious doctrine, because it's based on exclusion. It's based on better than and less than. It's based upon me over you. Or as we used to say as kids, nuh-uh, well, my brother could beat up your brother kind of mentality. Now, many of you don't like me saying it like that, because for those of you who have installed your belief system on high as the truth, well, okay then, none of us have the truth. We are all ultimately in pursuit of the truth. If we can accept that in one another, then we can accept the fact that we are all taking different courses, sailing toward that horizon, that each and every one of us have our own ships, so to speak, as we move toward destinations that we really don't even know what's there, because all we see is the horizon on an endless sea of possibilities. And what we experience on that endless sea of possibilities is the part that makes every living being the same. And that is, we all have feeling. We all have emotion. And that's why I don't elevate humankind to be better than other living things. Yes, we are more sophisticated. We have this incredible thing called language, like I've said. And we can tell ourselves stories. Instead of being drawn by instincts, by the natural demands of food, reproduction, the need for shelter, the desire to be safe and out of fearful, stressful situations, we have the language that conveys ideas that in turn can change our behavior, even create tools, circumstances, and deliberate acts of volition, choice to how to deal with those things. No other animal on this planet has those facilities. On sailing that ocean, feeling those feelings, setting a direction. You know, the boat I talked about is what makes the Michael teaching valuable for me. So when I talk about the roles and the overleaves and even soul age, which is a certain predilection to have the kind of overview toward life that I do and other Michael students do, but people we call old souls or even mature souls, and then see the effects of what we also call young and baby souls. And that's where the Michael teachings actually make enormous sense for me. It begins to encapsulate in a huge contextual way. It doesn't put a right or wrong on it. It doesn't put a better than or less than on it. It just simply gives it a structural explanation for it all that I can then see in a much broader, inclusive, and even less hostile, I'm less afraid kind of an attitude. Then it makes the world more understandable to me. There's another thing about the Michael teaching that has been really clear to me. This innate composition of who I am of overleaves and the unique way that they've been plunked down into this world, into the modern era, into the generation of baby booms, into the most rapid and often scary technological times of advancement that we've ever known, has given me so much exposure to either direct experience, but also to learn from the myriad of external events, circumstances, and progression of ideas. All that knowledge combined or filtered through these innate qualities, my overleaves, have brought me here to this junction in my life. This unique worldview that I possess is my story, just like your experiences through your overleaves. The knowledge you've learned or shunned is your story here. And one of the problems of the modern era is actually pretty simple. Many of us don't really get our story heard well enough, and therefore we don't get gotten. We don't get reflected back to us who we are. And in that deprived state, we feel this need then to make up a story about ourselves that may not be factually accurate about who we are. And then we compete to yell and scream louder than the next person to get heard, or we collapse in on ourselves. The purpose of this book on motivation, the storyline of our lives, is all about understanding the component parts and then looking at the processes that brought us to the place where we are trying to formulate the stories of our lives. And in the broader sense, getting gotten on those things for ourselves as individuals may help us to sometimes rewrite, but really more importantly, I think, fundamentally be understood as who we are innately, and then clean up some of the places where we've introduced falsehood or mistakes or fictions, not even trying to deceive anybody, but just trying to fill in the empty gaps where we've been afraid of that void. And then when we take the sum total of humanity and add it all up, and in the bigger picture, and see the reverberation effects, we come across a period of time where I think is really important to acknowledge. While all these storylines, fictionalized some, real others, suppressed some still, collectively, as a species, we've lost the thread of where we think we can go. And instead, we have turned ourselves completely to the physical and lost the spiritual and psychological awareness that it is our story building, our narratives, the ones we use for ourselves, but then the ones we also buy into, our religions, our sciences, our political beliefs, our beliefs about the marketplace, our beliefs about relationships. We've come to a place where none of them seem to be functioning very well, because we lack a vision of what we want for tomorrow. So at the end of reading my book, when it comes out, when it's done, I hope what you're able to assemble for yourself is not only a vision for what you want as an individual, but help contribute to a vision of where humanity and the playground of humanity, planet Earth, can go. And not can go with the cynicism, hatefulness, morbidity, and apathy that is and collapse seemingly everywhere in this world right now, but where it is literally possible because we embrace the facts as they are, but also we realize all that we can be if we just change our story about it. Thanks for listening.